So I'm glad to be back. I never know now, you know, when I'm going to be here. I had intended to last week, and I'm really grateful to Hugh Byrne, who last minute graciously took over and shared his Dharma wisdom. I had planned to give a talk on befriending our experience, really opening and embracing what's happening. And so I got to kind of practice in the trenches. started off to be a stomach flu landed up to be this pain in the lower right, which landed me up in the ER, which landed me up with an appendectomy. So we're talking like I really, that was nice. Could you do that again? Aww. I'm sorry. So here's the question, like, was I befriending my experience, you know, like, did the ER become sacred space, you know? And was I embracing my abdominal pain? And metza, you know, kind of, sort of, at first there was a lot of resistance, like the bottom line, an undercurrent of shouldn't be happening, don't want it to be happening. That's the first reflex, you know, and really wanting to be here and wanting to be healthy. And what became clear is when I stopped fighting what was happening, I wasn't like outright embracing it. I'm going to own up. I was kind of too out of it to do that. But there was increasing peace, as there wasn't. I wasn't at war so much. And so for me, it's been a real season of practice. This, as many of you know, wasn't my first round. And I can say there's such a deep gratitude for these practices because they make all the difference between pain and suffering. It's like unpleasant stuff's going to happen. And the question is, are we at war with it? And does, when it's happening, do we forget something larger, really a kind of wholeness and heart and awareness, which is what we are? And it's natural when things happen to contract. We all forget for a while. But as I like to say, with this practice of presence, the lag time decreases. There's a quicker remembering. So that's helpful. The Buddha basically described suffering as forgetting in some way, that we're caught in this notion that something's missing or something's wrong. And then we're caught in this reactivity where we're trying to get something more or we're trying to resist. And that to the degree that we're in our lives trying to manage things, trying to make things work out a certain way and trying to avoid things that might go wrong from happening, we're in a trance. Because we're forgetting in those moments a kind of presence and openness that's really available. So what we do when we practice is we keep on forgetting, even as we sit and meditate, not even as, especially when, right? We go off, and then there's a kind of, oh yeah, I've gone off. In meditation, it's usually in the form of thinking our way into something else. And then there's this practice of re-arriving, of homecoming, of coming back right here. So one of the main elements in this path of homecoming is cultivating a capacity to listen, a kind of listening presence, the receptive side, where we're not trying to control or manage or fix or figure or, you know, where we're really here listening. That's one of the key elements. I'd like to expand on that a bit tonight. I'll speak some and I'll also ask you to practice some. Start, as many of you know, Rumi is one of the great ones for this. I'm going to start with Rumi. Totally conscious and apropos of nothing, you come to see me. Is someone here? I asked. The moon, the full moon, is inside your house. My friends and I go running out into the street. I'm in here, comes a voice from the house, but we aren't listening. We're looking up at the sky. Lo, I am with you always means when you look for God, God is in the look of your eyes, in the thought of looking. Nearer to you than yourself are things that have happened to you. There's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in the quietness. Let your tongue become that flower. So the quietness that Rumi talks about is a listening presence. And, you know, when we wash ourselves of that habitual busyness that we're so identified with, that doing self, there's a kind of homecoming into that which is listening, into a silence and a stillness, and a kind of open vividness, a wakefulness, that's really what we are. So tonight I'd like to explore first what makes it so difficult to pause and listen. You know, how come it's so hard? It is hard, right? I mean, yeah, okay. So what makes it so difficult, and really how do we cultivate this capacity? And then just explore really what's possible, that transformation that's possible when we really learn to listen. And the basic understanding is that when we cultivate this capacity to pause and receive what's happening without controlling, because the only way we can sense what's here is if we're not trying to manipulate it. So when we can be receptive and listen, then we can act in the world from a deep place of wisdom and compassion. We can be of benefit. So there's really a kind of sequence that we have to breathe in. We have to receive what's happening, really open to it, to be able to then express and act from a place of full presence. So listening is basically the same as saying not interfering, not controlling, a wakeful presence. And it's a natural, simple reality of what we are. There's a natural listening when there's not a lot of static. And yet, when you try to meditate, how quickly we find out, let's say even the instructions are listen to what's happening, listen to the sounds, listening inwardly to what's going on here. It's challenging. It's challenging. Internally, as soon as, you know, we have a chance, the mind launches into that incessant inner dialogue, doesn't it? Did you notice that tonight, how quickly we're listening and then we're off? So inwardly in our meditation, it's hard to just listen to the life that's inside us. We immediately try to become the doing self again. Thinking, figuring, planning, tensing. And then with each other, it's hard. You know, can we really let go of our self-absorption when we're with each other? Let go of our need to show we are something. Let go of our agendas and really offer that space of unconditional presence, of listening. With no defense, nothing. So some of you might see the Maxine cartoons, and one of them that I love starts with, guess which four words a woman can say to scare a man out of his wits. Okay, first frame, she comes in the guise of a fireman. Our house is burning, and this guy, her husband, is reading a newspaper, and he's going, yeah, well, you know, doesn't look up. She comes in again, and this time she looks like a alien, and she's yelling, the Martians have landed. And he's going, oh, really? Third frame. She's like a doctor. You have terminal cancer. That's nice, dear. Fourth frame, she's there as herself. We need to talk. This time, he bolts, and he's going, and he's bolting, going, ah, no, please, no, dear God, I'm too young to die, you know. So, guys, does that resonate for you? The one thing. Steve Martin wrote this little piece called Communication in the Third Millennium, and he says there's a sophisticated new communication technique used between men and women that eases marital strain and opens wide the doors of understanding between the sexes. This new technique, developed by psychologists and sociologists, is called listening. It will be interesting to see if this new technique lasts or whether it will disappear and be replaced by older, more traditional methods such as leaving the room. So it feels, I wanted to speak on this in this particular season right around the holidays on purpose. And I think it's because from all the different faith traditions, there's a kind of common spirit of the holidays that is meant to be one of love and peace. And, as we all know, the great irony is we're frantically running around getting busier and busier, speedier and speedier, always a sense of trying to do something. It's like William James, over a century ago, described it as this ceaseless frenzy. He said, we're always thinking we should be doing something other than what we're doing right now. And I really know that one. It's like we're doing it, but there's some way we're just leaning into the next thing. Not here, listening, open, receptive to what is in the moment. So the Buddha offered a pretty simple and elegant kind of understanding of how it is that we get lost or leave what's here. And he basically said we're pursuing what might give us pleasure, we're avoiding what might give us pain, same thing as Western psychology, and we're also ignoring what's neither. In other words, if it doesn't offer, promise pleasure or threaten pain, then we ignore it. So we're either racing after something, resisting, or ignoring. And then he went beyond Western psychology in describing the ramifications when we're always managing experience, which is to say that our entire identity as we're managing becomes the doing self. We lose sight of Buddha nature, of the inherent wakefulness, of the openness that's here. We lose sight of it. Now, we're designed to try to control our environment. So I want to just put that out there right now. Everything about us, our minds and our bodies, are designed to try to control both our inner and our external environment and to pursue pleasure and avoid pain. So this isn't to badmouth doing. Activity is natural. But what it's saying, and the reason we're exploring listening, is that we go into trance when it becomes unconscious and incessant, which it is for most of us a lot of the time. When this doing, this constantly managing or controlling our experience. And when that happens, we're in trance. Sometimes it's been described a case of mistaken identity. We just think we're this person on our way somewhere that's supposed to get things done. That's a little smaller than what we are, right? So we're afraid, in a way, to stop and to listen. Because we're afraid that if we don't control, we won't get what we want and bad things will happen. So we keep on doing it. We're hooked to our efforts. And our main strategy of controlling is the thinking, figuring, planning, worrying. That's our main strategy for controlling. We're hooked on it. So we can see it. We can see how much we are hooked on controlling when we look at how we try to control other people. Some people, you know, if you have a child, you know how hard it is to restrain from trying to correct or threaten or direct your child. I mean, we just, it's like really difficult to hold back. But even if we're honest, if we're really honest with ourselves and how we're relating with others, we're always trying to control how other people experience us. We're always trying to control in a way our behaviors or an attempt to affect how they see us and how they treat us. And we're trying to control in the sense that we want something. We have an agenda. I heard one little story a few months ago of, so there's an older woman in Miami who's on a park bench, and a disheveled, older disheveled guy comes in. He sits down next to her, and so she kind of says, "So what's your story?" And he says, "Well, I'm just out of prison. I was there for 20 years." And she said, "Oh, yeah? What'd they put you in for?" And his response was, "Well, I murdered my wife." And then she says, "So, you're single?" You know. So rather than listening, it's this, we got this filter of what we're looking for. Was that a good Dharma illustration or not? We can see the controlling, the difficulty in just pausing and listening throughout the day when we're trying to get things done. And we can see it in the way we try to get rid of discomfort. It's hard to just listen to our heart and to feel the anxiety that is in most of our bodies and hearts a lot of the time. It's hard to just listen to that, just get still and be with that. We want to leave right away. It's hard to be with physical discomfort. It's hard to be with our anger. We want to act out. We get caught in the obsessive judging and blaming. He said, she shouldn't, I couldn't, he didn't, you know, because it's hard to sit with the feelings in our body that are intense. So we try to control them. It's even in meditation. Meditation, if it's done artfully, there's a certain amount of directing of the mind just to kind of come into presence. But then if we really want to be free, then to let go. Let it be as it is. If we're controlling our experience to get a certain state, okay, I'm going to sit here and pay attention to my breath so that my mind stops thinking and I feel tranquility, then that we might feel tranquility, but then as soon as we get up, it's gone. And there was no insight and no real waking up to a deeper sense of what we are, because you can't control yourself into freedom. It's a relaxing back into what's always and already right here. So it's skillful to direct our attention some, but not to get fixated on having a certain state, rather to be able to just sit back and listen. What's here? So as I mentioned, this is not a passive path. Listening and this kind of receptive presence allows us to be fully here, connect with our deepest awakeness so that we can act with real integrity in this world. I always love, and I heard this about Gandhi, that he, in addition to his regular meditations, took a day each week to sit in silence and prayer and just really get quiet. And he said he did it so that he could then act in this world from the deepest place in him. So this is a formula for activism that's wise. And then in the deepest way, for realizing and inhabiting the fullness of what we are. To pause and listen. So let's explore. We'll explore a little bit of how we cultivate that inwardly. And I know as soon as I say that, I see you getting ready to do a meditation. Just speak for a moment that that sounds can be a really valuable kind of anchor for presence, to begin to listen, because they're usually pretty neutral. There's not a strong feeling tone. It's a little easier to stay and then to begin to notice that they come and go and really discover a kind of openness that's there. So what I'd like to do is just ask you to take a moment, if you will. And you don't have to come sitting much differently, as more as just make sure you're comfortable as you can be. And let your attention relax. Be right here. And the only instructions, just to listen to your experience. Listen to the moment. Not control anything. Continue to listen and just to notice what happens when we attempt to listen without any interference. No resistance. For some, you might notice the mind going off into thoughts. And just to recognize that and arrive again. Listening to the sounds, listening to the life that's here. As you stay, you might notice, some of you, that what you've avoided surfaces when there's a real listening attention. Perhaps you become aware of physical discomfort that you had been tensing against, or in your body, or maybe it's a kind of sore ache in the heart, anxiety. For some, there's a sadness. Our restlessness. So often we go off and judge that and ignore it or move on. See if you can just keep listening. When you're ready, just take a few full breaths and open your eyes, and we're going to keep exploring and dropping into this again. But the inquiry is, what really happens when we offer a listening presence to our own experience? And I find it's really helpful to think of it like, what really happens when another person offers us a listening presence? We know what happens if another person, instead of listening to us, tries to fix us or tell us their experience or judges us. We know what that's like. Shuts us down, right? Disconnect, right? But what happens when they really listen with the kind of openness? One of the stories I love is of this young boy that lived in the Midwest, and there was a family next door, an elderly couple, and the wife of the couple passed away, and they were all very close, the two families, and the little boy went to the neighbors and spent some time with this elderly man after the passing of his wife. In fact, spent a long stretch of time with him one day, and some weeks later, the town had this kind of kindest acts of the year award, and the older man nominated this young boy. And so they were driving home from this gathering, this town gathering, and the mom said to her son, you know, what was it that you said to him that day that you went over and spent all that time with him? And he responded, I didn't say anything, Mommy. I just helped him to cry. That's a listening presence. That what happens when we offer that kind of listening to another is it gives a space for what needs to be expressed, for the sorrow or the loneliness to be expressed, for the fear to be expressed. Let me read you Wendell Berry, who I love. He says, I go among the trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me like the circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves it. It sings and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes and I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. We all have places in us that are tangled, that are unprocessed, that are undigested. I sometimes think of it as like these shy creatures in the woods, and that there's kind of an open field, and there's the sunlight in the open field, and we want them to invite them into the light of our awareness, because if they stay in the darkness, they end up causing suffering. And a listening attention is that invitation. When we offer to ourselves, when we ask that question, what wants my attention right now? If you just bring your awareness inside and say, what really wants my attention? What wants to be included? And then just listen. Then the tangled places, the hurting places, can unfold themselves, can be included in wholeness. So again, I'd like to invite you to we're going to just practice a little with that, to see how we can listen when it gets difficult, as Wendell Berry describes, just letting the parts of ourselves that might want attention to sing their song. So again, let the attention go inward. Let it be a listening attention, so it includes all the sounds that you can sense within and around you. Sensing the space that's here. And just relaxing open into that space. I go among the trees and sit still, just in this stillness, in this listening stillness. Feeling that you can listen to the whole moment, that you can listen to the life that's within you. And within this presence, let your attention bring to mind a difficult situation that might be in your life right now. Some place where you know you go into trance, where you go into reactivity. Or it might be that right here and now you're experiencing something difficult physically or emotionally. And just sense an intention to meet this with a listening presence. Like that little boy with the old man, just to hold a space. You might invite what's here, the shy creatures in the woods, just what is happening inside me, what wants attention. So you're inviting what's here. It's the felt sense of that difficult situation. Listening to the moment, feeling your body, your throat, your chest, your belly. And just sense what's playing through you. Just listen. Maybe you're listening to a thought or a belief about what's wrong. Just to notice that. And let it be one sound amongst many. Still sensing the sounds around you in the room, the space that's here. A listening presence has a gentle quality of just noticing what's here, perhaps a sadness in the heart or fear, restlessness, and just allowing it. So that whatever's going on for you right now, distraction, worry, sadness, or peace, just to listen, to offer that presence. And to feel your intention as we continue to come back again and again to offer this quality of heart and presence to the life within you. Opening your eyes when you'd like. When things are difficult, our habit is to either fight it, to either chase after something, to ignore it, to deny it. And we divide against ourselves. We split. And we get identified with being at war with what's there. We get identified with the self that's running away. In other words, our identity gets contracted and hitched to the ways we react. So with deep listening, we decondition that. We cut through that identification. Rather than being divided against parts of our experience, they're included in the light of awareness. And we realize that is what we are. It reconnects us with a naturalness, an openness, wakefulness. Now again, and this is, I know you just came out, I want to see if you can do this, just to pause and listen again, to let the words come and go that you're hearing. To see if you can, just in this moment again, pause. A listening awareness. Listening to the moment. Listening without controlling. And to deepen with the inquiry, who's listening? What is listening right now? What is it that's aware of sounds? And then just with your whole body's awareness, let go into that. There's no figuring out. Wash yourself of yourself, Rumi says. Be that openness, that silence that knows sound. Centuries ago, Angelus Silesius said it a different way, same idea. God, whose love and joy are present everywhere, can't come to visit you unless you aren't there. God, whose love and joy are present everywhere, can't come to visit you unless you aren't there. This listening presence relaxes the selfing. It reveals that wholeness and freedom that's our true nature. Continuing with presence, just to hear the sounds of the gong, let them come and go in awareness. And then opening your eyes again. Purposely going in and out of the formal sitting, because this isn't a practice just for being on a cushion or in a chair, but for being able to pause any time and saying, okay, what's happening? Just to listen. I'd like to take the last part of this to explore how we enlarge that listening to really listen to others. And I'd like to share with you a poem by Mary Oliver that has everything to do with the intimacy that happens when we listen. She said, "Once I saw in a quick falling white-veined stream among the leafed islands of the wet rocks, a small bird, and knew it from the pages of a book. It was the dipper, and dipping he was, as well as sometimes, on a rock peak, starting up the clear, strong pipe of his voice. At this, there being no words to transcribe, I had to bend forward as it were, into his frame of mind, catching everything I could in the tone, cadence, sweetness, and briskness of his affirmative report. I had to bend forward, as it were, into his frame of mind, catching everything I could in the tone, cadence, sweetness, and briskness of his affirmative report. Though not by words, it was more than satisfactory way to bridge to the bridge of understanding. This happened in Colorado more than half a century ago, more certainly than half my lifetime ago. And just as certainly, he has been sleeping for decades in the leaves beside the stream, his crumble of white bones, his curl of flesh, comfortable even so. There's something in listening that transcends time and space, that allows us to wake up out of that doing self trance and really rest and abide in an awareness and openness that connects us with all of life everywhere. It's a necessary part of healing our world to listen to others. Everyone needs to be listened to. I was reading Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and he was describing this era as a time of radical brokenness in all our relationships, and talked about the global family and disconnection and fear of one another. He's describing how even in this noisy era, people shout at each other in print, at work, on TV. Volume is directly related to our need to be listened to. People are clamoring for attention. We'll do whatever it takes to be noticed. So we listen as this kind of way for intimacy, and we listen for healing because this is the need of our world. Many of you know in his description of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearings in South Africa, the kind of that the need was that the stories be listened to. That when we listen to someone's story, we hold that presence, we reconnect. Just as Mary Oliver connect intimately with this creature, the Dipper, we reconnect with each other. Read you one person's testimony at the hearings in South Africa. One young man who had been blinded when a policeman shot him in the face at close range said, "I feel what has brought my eyesight back is to come here and tell the story. I feel what has been making me sick all the time is the fact that I couldn't tell my story." So there's the inner listening when we really say, what wants attention? And listen, the repressed parts, the shadow parts, the fear, the sadness get included in the whole. They get to unfold themselves. And we also get to experience then in that quietness the goodness and the beauty and the love that's there, the naturalness that's there. And the same thing happens when we listen to others. The reason I called this talk kind of the magic of listening is that when we listen, we call out the spirit of another when we really listen. When we really listen, when the presence is open and unconditional, we call out the heart and the wisdom that's there. Even if it's deeply buried, because at first we'll listen to another, and when it's been deeply buried, they might be superficial in the way they communicate. And if there's a lot of fear in that person and a lot of prior rejection, non-listening, then what they say will be habitual or canned. But if we keep listening, if we keep holding that quality of unconditional presence in time, in that atmosphere, that person will be able to express from this deeper and deeper place of purity and wisdom. That's the gift we can offer each other. We can invite out the spirit in each other, that wakefulness. And then it becomes very fresh. I was reading, a friend in the Sangha gave me an article maybe last year by Brenda Wieland, and I was reading it, and she described being estranged from her father and the pain of that, and how she was able to then, with another friend of the family, a man she had known for many years, heal some of the wounds of that estrangement through listening. And I wanted to read you a description of that process. Because she talks about this older man as being an unusually forceful man. He had made a great deal of money, but had no ability to listen. He talked rapidly, told wonderful stories, and it was fascinating to hear them. But when I spoke, restlessness. Just hand me that, will you? Where's my pipe? And it was just a habit. He read countless books and was eager to take in ideas, but he could not listen to people. Well, this is what I did. I was more patient. I did not resist his non-listening talk as I had with my father. I listened and I listened and I listened, not once pressing against him, even in the thought with my own self-assertion. I said to myself, when he's really been listened to enough, he will grow peaceful. He will begin to want to hear me. And he did. After a few days, he began asking me questions. And presently, I was saying gently, "You see, it is hard for you to listen." He stopped dead and stared at me. And it was because I had listened with such complete, absorbed, uncritical sympathy, without one bit of boredom or impatience, that he now believed and trusted me, although he did not know this. "Please," he said, "now talk. Tell me about that. Tell me all about that." Well, we walked back and forth across the lawn, and I told him my ideas about it. "You love your children, but probably don't let them in. Unless you listen, people shrink. They're dried up in your presence. They become about a third of themselves. Unless you listen, you can't know anybody. Oh, you'll know the facts and what is in the newspapers and all of history, perhaps, but you will not know one single person. You know, I've come to think listening is love. That's what it really is." So she describes what he wrote to her after that meeting. He said his children at once came closer. He was astonished to see what they are, how original, independent, courageous. His wife seemed to really care about him again, and they were actually talking about all kinds of things and making each other laugh. When someone listens to you, when someone deeply listens to you, it is like holding out a dented cup you've had since childhood and watching it fill up with cold, fresh water. When it balances on top of the brim, you are understood. When it overflows and touches your skin, you are loved. When someone deeply listens to you, the room where you stay starts a new life, and the place where you wrote your first poem begins to glow in your mind's eye. It is as if gold has been discovered. When someone deeply listens to you, your bare feet are on the earth, and a beloved land that seemed distant is now at home within you. So our training here is not abstract. This is described on the Bodhisattva path, this path of awakening beings. It's on the cushion, it's off the cushion that we're learning to cultivate this quality of presence where we listen to our inner life, we listen to each other, and in so doing, discover that intimacy and openness that really is what heals this world. There is a radical shift in our sense of who we are as this capacity deepens in us. And the shift, as the Buddha described it, is from a sense of a separate self to the awareness that knows, to loving presence. So we'll end tonight in a way that is is special. We've done it maybe once before here, where we'll again be listening, but we will have the beauty and the transmission of the bamboo flute that Jonathan Faust will be playing. So if Jonathan, you'll come up here, we'll do a final meditation, and then when I stop speaking, Jonathan will begin playing. If you're physically uncomfortable right now and you need 15 seconds to move or stretch, do whatever it takes and then come sitting again. We won't be very long. Coming into stillness, letting your eyes close. Give yourself that gift of letting go if there's a part of your body that's been habitually tensing. Maybe just take a few full breaths, and with the exhale, let go, let go. Aware of the sounds that are here. And feeling the vividness of here-ness, of being right here. Listening to the moment without any resistance. Sensing the openness that includes this whole dance of life. The sounds, the sensations. Just be that openness, that awareness. Allowing the sounds to rise, dissolve in this openness. There's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in the quietness. Let your tongue become that flower. May our practice of presence, our listening, our awakening hearts be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all beings be filled with loving kindness. May all beings touch a natural and great peace. May all beings awaken to the awareness and love which is their true nature. May all beings be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.